Okay, we're going to make a start. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen, for attending this session. You were brought here with Sakai 3 as the title for this. In the interim, the name has changed, so we're going to tell you about the Sakai Open Academic Environment. And thanks especially for braving the glorious Anaheim weather this morning. I'm going to go through some background very briefly because David is going to give a demo and Lucy is going to talk about some of the way that this environment is going to be used and is being used at NYU in a few weeks. So my background is going to remind us a little bit about where we come from because it's important to understand and remember that to know where we're going. Thinking back to the 1990s and the start of the use of the web for to support academic endeavor, we of course had everybody more or less had their own homegrown learning management system. Since that point, we've seen consolidation and commercialization that we all know about. But one of the concomitants of that consolidation and commercialization has tended to create a distance between those who are academic practitioners who are capable of identifying the innovation and those who realize it. And that's very much what Sakai has been about during its history. I won't spend too long on the initial Sakai project. Sakai project began 2003, 2004. The schools involved I want to draw your attention to because I want to contrast that to the Sakai Open Academic Environment project. So we had MIT, Stanford, Michigan, Indiana, Berkeley, and Foothill Community College. Key driver there was the consolidation of those homegrown learning management systems at all those schools. We obtained some Mellon Foundation funding, which about equaled the institutional investment there. And I should, of course, draw attention to the role that Ira Fuchs played in the Mellon Research and Information Technology Program in supporting a whole range of projects, and Sakai is particularly grateful for his support. So the focus was on the creation of what we called a collaboration and learning environment, not just a learning management system. We intended Sakai to be used for research collaboration, for social collaboration among students, for administrative collaboration. And while it's true that the Sakai collaboration and learning environment is used in many schools as a replacement for a learning management system, in several places, several dozen places, it's used as more than that. Now, the original project had an approach to organization which was very much based around an institution, one of those institutions there, leading tools work. And again, I'm going to contrast how we're organizing the Sakai Open Academic Environment project. Community source has been, and open source has been all over this conference, so I'm not going to dwell on this. Simply to say that this is, of course, community source grew up over the last several years as a way of pooling institutional and community resource, learning lessons from open source software development, ensuring that we licensed in a way that encouraged commercial participation and commercial engagement. And really, if one looks back at the history of the last 10 years, the report that Paul Courant wrote in 2006 focused this quite sharply. Community source is primarily about costs, community, and control of our own destiny. So since the initial Sakai project, the changes that we've seen, Sakai Foundation now, not Sakai Project, it's a not-for-profit. This slide is out of date. We have 82 global institutional partners and 19 commercial partners. The foundation is meant to be a lightweight organization, is a lightweight organization. We provide infrastructure. We provide real and virtual meeting points. We run programs such as a fellows program. We have an elected board. We have relatively small numbers of staff, and we rely on organizing volunteer contributions from the community. And we're about sharing problems and brokering solutions to those problems. Looking at the Sakai Open Academic Environment, the Sakai 3 project organization, note the way the schools have changed, because some of those schools are the same. Some of those schools were there at the start of the Sakai project. But to those schools, we've added NYU, Cambridge in the UK, Charles Sturt in Australia, and with support from Cape Town and Stanford. Now, that's a real sea change that might not be apparent. Sakai is very much a global community now. The project has an intimate connection with the growing Sakai teaching and learning community. Our software has been out there long enough to grow a community of use around that. And I just wanted to point up a URL there that when you download the presentation, you can go to see some of that independent work of the teaching and learning community, the learning capabilities design lenses. In terms of project organization, we have hired project management specifically to manage the project. We've hired functional specialists, particularly functional specialists in the area of user experience design. In higher education, that's something which we have not focused on particularly well in the past, so that's something that we have pooled resources to draw in. And that's an indication of how much we believe the user has to be at the center of this process, the academic user and the learner. The project has a series of user reference groups. The designs and the software iterations are taken through those user reference groups in a considered and meticulous way, and we secure their feedback at every point. And to introduce the meat of the presentation, the environment itself, just want to consider briefly some of the changes in the environment since the learning management system came to be defined. We've seen an explosion of social networking, that much is obvious, and a desire by practitioners to embed and integrate elements of social networking with academic practice. And for many of our practitioners, the conventional learning management system is becoming a straitjacket. I think in all of our institutions, we're aware of those folks who are pushing the outside of the envelope, you know, the left field boundary. Increasingly, in a networked world, the learning management system is a constraint also in terms of content and services. Our practitioners want to integrate content services from outside the environment. They want to use tools from outside the environment, and they want to surface content and tools from inside the environment to outside. That straitjacket really is quite tool siloed in some ways. So the open academic environment has a particular focus on flexibility, on workflow, not being tool-based, but being workflow-based and flexible enough to meet a variety of academic workflows. So if I were to choose some keywords to describe this environment, it would be flexible, permeable, remixable, composable. They're all the objectives that we're aiming for. And a last point on this. We don't want... Sometimes it's necessary to reinvent wheels, but reinventing software wheels is expensive. So the project is making use of components from the Apache Foundation. If you're interested in the technology, then Sling and JackRabbit. So we reuse those components from outside the academic environment, and we focus our development effort on adding value in the academic context. And that, we think, has some real potential as a path forward. Over to Lucy.
Hi, I'm Lucy Afford. I am an academic, so I think the fact that someone like me is here today really represents many of the things that Ian has been talking about. I coordinate instructional technology for a 2,000-student liberal arts program within NYU, and I'm trained in the 17th century. So the fact that someone that hardcore is that interested in technology also tells you a lot about the kind of technology. So I just want to give you a little bit of background about the NYU project before we go into the demo. At NYU, our project is an academic-led project, which means that 2 years ago, a group of academic programs got together and in very serious budget times put together $50,000 each to go to ITS with David and form a collaboration to implement Sakai 3. We felt very strongly about this because, as Ian was saying, in the past, technology has been made for academics, and we've kind of been told how to shape our practices. But the work that academics do has been changing. And as in our personal lives and in our research and teaching lives, more technology has crept in, our expectations have changed. So what do academics do all day? If we can answer this, my husband would like to know because he's been asking for about 20 years now. But as you see here, the kinds of things, connecting, collaborating, synthesizing, archiving, recommending, and managing courses is a very small piece of that. So having a piece of technology or the central piece of technology that only addresses one piece of what you do becomes problematic. When we cohered our group at NYU, and I'll talk a little bit about how a group as diverse as the College of Nursing, our liberal arts program, a graduate program in public service can come together and agree on technology. It's very interesting in a minute. These are the things that everyone cohered around. Our faculty members wanted an internal and external facing profile. The truth about academia is that because of the coverage model, most of the time what you do, your collaboration, is across institutions rather than within your institutions. Most institutions don't need a couple of Miltonists in a particular department, right? So faculty need to be able to connect with people who do what they do. And the internet has become the way you do that, and you need a profile to help you find each other. Sharing resources and collaborate with their colleagues at other institutions. Easily share multimedia resources with students, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And an integration of services is what Ian was talking about, not reinventing the wheel, but being able to pull what you're doing in a tool that works really well into an environment where you're doing other things. So the idea of sharing profiles is very exciting in Sakai 3 because one of the partners in the Sakai 3 venture is the American Academy of Religion, which is a professional organization. So having a professional organization offering a space for collaboration and profiles that is the same as your institutional collaboration and profiles is really exciting. It means that we're moving closer to cross-institutional sharing. And that's a huge barrier for faculty members. A lot of research work gets done in Google Docs right now because it's really difficult to get outside of your institution or let other people into your institution system to share. What has been happening in instructional technology is really kind of increased this artificial divide between teaching and research. And in fact, most faculty members have a continuum between what they do in their research lives and what they do in their teaching lives. That's how they get hired. So I'll give you an example of a professor from our program. She works on Afro-Brazilian music. She goes to Brazil. She goes to New York. She creates audio recordings. She creates video recordings. She needs to take this material, share, and collaborate in her courses as research for her book project, with an interdisciplinary research group in NYU, and then as part of a cross-institutional professional association, an online journal and website. And she wants to do this from one central place, right, to have the things in one repository. And being able to do that seamlessly is the kind of thing that we're going after with Sakai 3, giving her a platform for sharing internally and externally. In terms of teaching and learning, the power of metaphor, and if you come back at 9:30, we're going to be doing a presentation about the intellectual processes behind and implications of instructional technology at NYU and why we've chosen Sakai 3. But I'll just say here that the power of the system you're in is something that often gets underestimated. So what we're saying to students in a university is we want you to become intellectual agents. We want you to become independent. We want you to begin to synthesize material across your courses and have these epiphanies. But what we're giving them in the technology they operate in is a set of discrete experiences where you can't cross between courses, where anything you do in a course is kind of a data cul-de-sac. You can't reuse it. You don't have access to it again. So the course site metaphor actually runs against the kind of message that we have in higher education. So one of the things we also like about the idea of Sakai 3 is that if you start from a network, rather than the idea of an individual course. You have a lot of different possibilities. You're making suggestions to students that their experience runs across their courses, across any content that might be shared in the system, across groups they might participate in, across the profiles that they might be searching for. They have a consistent experience. Student autonomy, interconnection of learning experiences, these are the kinds of things that, as academics, we're always trying to get across to our students, that you're embarking on this path and everything's going to come together. But if the technology we're using suggests everything is discrete and you're not taking anything out of it, we're kind of working against ourselves. So finally, how do a bunch of diverse groups within NYU and within the Sakai community come together and agree on a piece of software? And I think the values that Ian emphasized at the end of his portion prevail here. One of the things we like to use, a metaphor we like to use about Sakai 3 is it's like a loft. It's a very firm structure. And within it, you can put up lots of walls. Your customizations. These walls would be templates, these walls would be widgets. And these walls are real, they feel real, it looks, that's your experience, but they don't affect the structure itself, right? Which is very different from an idea of where the tools are bolted on and pulled in or pulled out and you have to remake the system. It's also, this loft is also open for integrations rather than remaking the wheel. And it's also open for external solutions that can be put on top of or underneath it so that it remains a platform. And we'll talk more about some of those internal and external solutions at the presentation at 9:30 if you're able to come back. So now that I've totally hyped this up, why don't we take a look at it?
So first, I want you to know that I am not worthy of being the demoer for this software. The only reason I'm up here in front of you is that my collaborators are too smart to do this. NYU, and I think Ian's going to talk about this later, but we're kind of all in on Sakai open academic environment. By that I mean we've literally taken all the possible resources that we could and have donated it to the project under the direction of Alan Marks, who, by the way, deserves applause for the incredible work that he's done as a project manager to pull off the first quarterly release that was due on September 30th, on time on September 42nd. I think it's really remarkable. And what we discovered, actually, in the first quarter was that we had thrown so much of our resources, and we actually had nobody left at NYU to put the software up, but up it is. Also, I'm personally all in on this project, and by that I mean when the Sakai 3 board met, somebody asked a question at one point, so how many of you will lose your jobs if this doesn't work? And, you know, the hands went up around the table for the people who were actually throwing in a significant amount of resources, really as much as was contributed in the Sakai 1. And I think Ian's going to make a pitch, so I won't upstage that later for people to participate. The greatest part about this project has been working with collaborators around the world. It's just fantastic. The friends and collaborations that we've made, you know, with Indiana and with Cambridge and Australia, it's just, and the West Coast, it's just been, for me personally, a real highlight of my career. So, we will attempt a demo with the proviso that you should never appear on the stage with children, animals, or pre-data software. Before we go to the demo, I want to put in a very inappropriate pitch, which will probably, they'll never let me stand up at EduPuzz again, but I have 15 open positions, so anyone in the audience who needs a job or knows someone who needs a job, stay late and come see you. And the other proviso I will say about demoing is that we're demoing on a network named IBAN. And what is it? What is IBAN? What? Packets? I mean, what kind of name is that for a network? So anyway, what you see here is the login page. And this is live off of the NYU server. You can see it's Stage Atlas. It's not a production. We're going into production on November 2nd. But this is actually real. That's a picture of me, which you can possibly make out, and my little puppy dog. we're going to click on David Ackerman and show you that we can edit the profile. That's pretty fast. Could you slow that down?
Don't even wish it.
So we're gonna edit the profile, add something in here so that you can see that this is like really. How about something about me? Happy to be here. And then update. It gives a little message that you've updated your profile. Let's go to the user dashboard and show some widgets. So we've preloaded some widgets that, including the French word of the day via the Google Gadgets Wizard.
Loi.
Can we do that again? I just like hearing that.
Loi.
Nice. And then these things you can drag and move them around. Very cool. Why don't you move the Google Gadget over to the right? You can create a page. Page title, EDUCAUSE. No.
Yep.
Use your imagination.
All right.
It'd be easier if you stand.
It might be, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can add content. You could put in a resume.
Thank you. Yes. I should have thought of doing that. You can add widgets, etc.
Yeah, you can.
Let's go into contacts. You can, so I have some recent contacts. You can add a contact. How about James Bullen? Nice. It's really fast. Mm-hmm. I don't know, do people follow? Is the speed of the software too fast for it? I apologize for
that. It's rare that you hear a New Yorker say it's too fast.
We can send a message to the contacts. In fact, let's send a message to James. I know he's kind of making sure that things go well for us here today. No, you want to go, yeah. Hey, James, you're right. Get me in trouble. Never let somebody log into your account. It's another lesson. Okay, that's cool. How about a little chat? Can we chat with Bob in the audience? Of course, Bob is on the iPad network.
Well, first we need to. I think we need to add Bob as a. I think we need to add Bob as a. Are you a contact of ours? I think you are.
I will be in a second.
Next.
Yep.
Doesn't really do Bob.
Justice.
Justice, yeah.
Okay, let's see.
Close enough. Oh, here we go. Pretty cool.
All right. One interesting thing is that these chats are archived. One thing about that I didn't mention is that NYU has a big global presence, and in our program alone, we have 300 students who start their freshman year abroad. So archiving advising sessions, online advising sessions, is a big issue, and we're very excited about having a record.
Oh, I should say, just people might be looking at this and going, what the hell is that? This is the local NYU brand for Sakai Open Academic Environment. It's called ATLAS, which stands for Academic Teaching, Learning,
and Scholarship.
Teaching, Learning, and Scholarship. Mm-hmm. And believe me, over the other finalists, this was the best. I get the bigger laughs.
Yeah, really. So we're chatting away.
So we're chatting, yeah, nice. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at groups.
right.
You talk about the Atlas homepage briefly. Basically, this is your landing page where you can manage the different aspects of your account, contacts, content, and groups. Mm-hmm. Groups, obviously, as Lucy was saying before, replace the concept of sites. And a group is a place where you bring people together to share content and pages, and any user can create a group in the system. Of course, it's one kind of group. So that's, you know, warning keyword coming. That's where the paradigm changes. The paradigm is no longer the site. The paradigm is the group. And then content is in my group. It's my content. So when maybe there's a group that goes away, like the course goes away, I still keep my content. You don't take it away when you take away the course. Mm-hmm. Let's go to a group. How about, I think I have an EduPost group.
Mm-hmm.
Demonstrate the widgets and how to add them to the group dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
This is pretty cool. I mean, it's so easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just add or remove the widgets. It's
mm-hmm.
Should we go to, we can go to manage a group.
Mm-hmm.
You can set a description, you can set tags.
Mm-hmm.
How about open space?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one word, right?
Mm-hmm.
Could be.
Could be one. All right.
You can set directory paths. You can set group permissions.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what's nice about this too, it's very easy to surface the content, as Lucy was saying. Mm-hmm. So you make it public. You want to share it, you know, publicly.
Mm-hmm.
You don't keep it private. Oh, that's a good one. What is that Dilbert thing?
Yeah, it's hard to get to actually.
Oh,
but yeah. We didn't do a good upload, but yeah.
So you can invite people to join your group. Why don't we invite, I don't know.
Bob, maybe? Let's see.
Yeah,
let's see.
I feel like Bob would be joining
you. All right.
It's nice to type a few letters and find some of the directory. And they can join the group as either members or managers. So obviously the manager has more control over the group than a member.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is Lucy's kind of favorite thing that she wanted to demo, the course group.
Mm-hmm. So I'll just show you quickly. David is a student in my course, Cultural Foundations, which actually is a course that I'm actually teaching this semester with Bob.
Can you show the syllabus?
Yes, I'm going to go right to the syllabus. And the syllabus works in the same way that live syllabus tools work. We can go to a document on medieval art and take a look at these images. Oops. Well, let's see. Oops. Oh, yeah, that was a reminder, I think. So I won't go in, but I could go into the art store group. I could look at this. Maybe I could go in the options.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm in pop-up blocker hell. Okay, so we can take a look at these, and these have remote content in them also. So another thing that people often want to have loaded into a syllabus. Going back to my syllabus. Okay. Okay. We can also go to an assignment here. We have all the assignments loaded, and students can download the files for assignments. They can also preview them. I have a recorded lecture the students can come in and take a look at as well.
We're going to take a look today at the connection between Greek sculpture and Egyptian sculpture. We'll start here with this funerary statue of King Menkaure.
So you can see video embeds and plays very well. And then students actually get a nice content creation tool for creating multimedia content. As teachers, this has been a real barrier because what we do, asking students to analyze and interpret, has been confined to paper, right? But the things that we're asking them to analyze and interpret are multimedia now. And how do you begin to move those skills across from paper? So a place for students to begin to incorporate multimedia text analysis in one place, and this kind of page allows that, the content creation tool.
Should we
Go
next to let's join a group?
All right.
So we do a search for groups. And we can request to join a private group. Why don't you search on Brooklyn?
This looks exclusive.
So if there's an exclusive group, you can request to accept you as a member. Did we want to add content from the homepage?
We can.
Okay. Let's try to add some content. We'll add files from the desktop. I think you have a triangle angled JPEG. Mm-hmm. By the way, they handed me the microphone and they said I have to redo any joke that got a laugh before because it wasn't properly recorded because I didn't have the mic.
I can add tags. I can decide who can see this, whether it's public or private.
You can add links, permissions. Mm-hmm. You can manage the content. You can look at the content that you're a viewer of.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Actually, we should show that. That's a big file. Since David is a student in my class, he can go to his content area, and he can have all of the assignments for my class here. Right, so he doesn't have to go to the site and download them. He has access to these. And there are access controls so that some things will go away and some things he can keep for forever, even when I shut down the class.
And then finally, we're going to do a search for content. You can search for content. You can search for people. You can search for groups.
Yeah.
You can search for, how about study abroad preliminary application. That's a big search term. Cool.
Yep.
How about searching for Bible?
Okay.
Again, apologize for how fast this thing searches. It's really...
What's interesting about this is that Bible is a tag on some of these art history images, but Bible just appears in the text of my syllabus. So it's doing a very deep search through content.
So that's the end of our demo. I want to turn it back over to Ian.
Thanks, David and Lucy. Some of you, I suspect, have been through our transition from one learning management system to another. I know at the university I used to work at in the UK, the University of Hull, we did that. It's the kind of thing you don't want to do too often if you haven't been through one. So I want to talk briefly about how we get from where we are now to what you've seen starting to happen. And please bear in mind, I mean, that's a pre first release, first quarterly release. The project has been running since July this year. We have a lot of work in background, fortunately, but that's incredible progress in that amount of time. And there are some really exciting features there. So I want to mention something called hybrid mode, which sounds very complicated, but essentially using an IMS specification, basic LTI, it allows tools and sites from within the Sakai 2 environment to be surfaced within the kind of composable environment that you've just seen. We have a lot of scoping work to do on that, but we have to bear in mind the existing learning management system is not going to disappear overnight. Those of us who have been through the kind of transition that I described may well want to think about ways of smoothing the path in the future. Now, whilst hybrid is not fully scoped, it's part of the Open Academic Environment project. The idea is very much that the two environments can run alongside one another. One can draw on the strengths of the other. And that might ultimately mitigate the kind of big bang transition between environments that we've been used to. It also opens up a possibility, and again, this is not a promise, this is a possibility, it's potential, of wrapping the Sakai Open Academic Environment services around another learning management system that supports the IMS Basic LTI specification. And I think that's of specific interest to those of you who might be facing a transition or facing some choices between now and 2012. So, in terms of this project, we have a significant number of resources in human terms dedicated. We have finance dedicated from those institutions to hire the experts in that I described. You're seeing the fruits of that already, but this project needs more resources. So really what I'd leave you with is think very seriously about participating in the Sakai Open Academic Environment project. If you've not considered the Sakai Foundation before, it's not a very threatening place. It's made up of people exactly like you who choose to work together to control their own destiny, to narrow that gap between identifying innovation and realizing innovation. That's what it's all about. Frankly, we need money to do that, we need your help to do that, and we need your work to do that. So please do consider that. And thanks very much for listening. I believe we've got a reasonable amount of time for some questions and comments. We have a number of people involved in the project in the room, so you will probably find one of us will be able to answer your questions. I didn't, but our project director, Alan Marks, will do.
All right. I'm Alan Marks. So
done at NYU. It's done at NYU.
David says it's done. So the original plan was 1 year. My expectation is that it will go longer than that. Right now we're looking at rescoping some of the original goals of the project and understanding in more detail how they fit in.
Yeah, I think it's also worth saying that what you're seeing here is not Sakai 3 version 1, right? Sakai 3 version 1 is due to be completed at the end of July 2011. What you're seeing here is just the first quarter release on the way to Sakai 3 version 1.
It's early in the morning and everybody is stunned.
You emphasize the global collaboration. What are the biggest challenges to doing that?
Meeting times. Yeah, I mean, there's no good time to have a meeting where at least two of the participants have a little bit of suffering, whether that means, you know, it's either late at night or early in the morning for some number of people. I mean, there's a great website you can go to that shows this problem clearly. And when you have collaborators around the world, it's impossible to have a time that's, you know, great for everyone. But that having been said, the same people seem to be suffering each time, and they keep coming back, so.
One of the ironies is that we really need some kind of open academic environment to facilitate that collaboration.
Yeah. We'll talk at 9:30 a little bit more about how different groups with different priorities have been able to fit themselves into this framework. And I think the framework is particularly exciting in terms of collaboration, because the collaboration is the product, but it also in people beginning to rethink what technology is and how it's delivered, we've really seen a lot of growth, I think. And so I think that's a really good question, and we'll answer it really well at 9:30.
You know, I think a lot of folks see pretty significant change coming in education over the next 5 to 10 years, and so I'm curious, from NYU's perspective or other collaborators in the project, how do you see Sakai 3, you know, or the academic environment preparing you strategically to be successful?
Well, I think one thing that you can't emphasize enough is the fact that it's open for integrations, so that you're not rebuilding the wheel every time. You build an integration to something. When something better comes along, you transition over to that. We've seen this in terms of collaboration environments for teaching in the past, say, 3 years. I've had faculty moving into this, moving on to something else. So I think, again, the idea of the loft structure, building something that you can integrate easily into rather than rebuilding over the time. In terms of portfolio, we see this also, because portfolio is a good example, and we'll talk about that at 9:30 as well. A lot of our members cohere around the need for portfolio, but if you get 5 people in the room, you'll have 7 ideas of portfolio easily, right? And so the ability to rethink portfolio and integrate into things that work specifically for people rather than building software around a particular set of needs. So I think that the loft structure is key in that.
The other thing I'd add is that at NYU, where we're building ourselves as the global network university, we're building a campus right now in Abu Dhabi. We're building 35 buildings on a 50-acre campus on Saadiyat Island. And we're probably going to be building something in China as well. The idea of having a tool like the Open Academic Environment that can facilitate collaboration on a global basis, as opposed to this kind of dead learning management system that we have now, where you put content in and people look at it, that's just not going to do it, you know, to answer your question, over the next 5 or 10 years, where we have students are going to be studying abroad in New York, right, because they're based in China or Abu Dhabi. And we have faculty that want to teach classes literally in 3 locations around the world at the same time. That requires a high degree of collaboration, which our current systems really don't support. So to me, I see that the collaborative features are the key to the underpinning of a global network university.
We just read dinner.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.